In August 2021, the National Cyber Security Centre became aware of malicious cyber activity affecting the Parliamentary Council Office and the Parliamentary Service.
New Zealand's tonight in a tricky situation after the government confirmed China, our biggest trading partner, tried to hack the parliamentary network.
This is the first very serious attack that I'm aware of against one of our democratic institutions.
What do you think the Chinese were trying to achieve?
Tends to involve trying to gain information for strategic advantage. It involves the theft of intellectual property.
One should not pin the blame on some certain countries without any factual basis, still less politicise this issue.
China's reaction to the accusations from the government was fiery. New Zealand is barking up the wrong tree, it said. China was being smeared without facts.
Yeah, this is a first for New Zealand, publicly attributing a malicious cyber activity on our democratic institutions by China. That's a big step for us.
It really is very rare for New Zealand government to speak up and name and shame another state for a hostile or malign act.
So you're 100% sure that these attacks came from China? It sounds like the Chinese are denying this. You are 100% unequivocally saying that these are coming from the Chinese government.
I trust our security agencies.
Our analysis enabled us to confidently link the actor to the People's Republic of China, specifically the Ministry of State Security.
Hi, I'm Alexia Russell, and today on The Detail, what was behind the Chinese cyber hack? Why are we only hearing about it now? And where do we go from here? Well, Newsroom's national affairs editor, Sam Suchdeva, literally wrote the book on this. It's called The China Tightrope. And tightrope is the word often used to describe the manoeuvres involved in calling out our biggest trading partner when we don't approve of what it's doing. Even the way the news was delivered had nuance.
So it's a classic New Zealand understated response to international crises or a notable situation. So we had a press release that came out from the Minister for our spy agencies, Judith Collins, announcing that New Zealand's parliamentary networks had been the subject of a state-sponsored Chinese attack, cyber attack, in 2021. So it's a little bit old, a few years old, but. Access into the parliamentary service networks and the parliamentary council office, which is in charge of, producing and overseeing legislation. So, quite a big deal. It came on the heels of the United Kingdom and the United States making announcements about their own experience of Chinese state-sponsored attacks.
The United Kingdom judges that these actions demonstrate a clear and persistent pattern of behaviour that signals hostile intent from China.
Ours is slightly different. It was a different group in question that was doing it, but I think the synchronicity of the announcements is no accident either.
Why are we only hearing about it now?
I think it's a mix of the technical and the political from what was said about it earlier this week.
It has taken nearly 3 years for that calling out to occur and for the attack to be made public. The former PM, Chris Hipkins, did not address it with President Xi Jinping when they met last year in Beijing.
We raised a number of issues, but this was not one of them.
Nor was it discussed just last week when Christopher Luxon sat down with China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi in Wellington.
Our officials raised malicious cyber activity earlier in the month. In my short meeting with them, I didn't raise this particular incident.
Why not?
Authorities say it took time to bolster internal systems and then build a case, but also to compare notes with other countries and coordinate a response.
So the GCSB Director General, Andrew Clark, was asked about this, as were the politicians, and he said that, it takes time to go through the attribution process. You need to, dot your I's and cross your T's and be very sure before you make a statement about this, saying that it is a state-sponsored group, because the consequences of going early and getting that wrong would be quite significant, funnily enough.
Well, especially to your biggest trading partner.
Well, precisely. And that's probably where the political element comes in as well. I think he said ultimately it was a decision for the government to make, the government of the day. And there would have been discussion around, China is a very important trading partner, a very important partner in general. How do we do this? Do we go alone? Do we go in tandem with other countries? And I think that was quite important from the sounds of things to make sure that we weren't sticking our neck out on our own, that we did have the UK and the US, fellow Five Eyes members, joining in and saying, look, this is not a one-off, this is a systemic problem that we're dealing with.
But we haven't gone as far as they have we?
No, we haven't. And that is partly practical. So they have both announced sanctions against the state-sponsored actors involved. We can't do that, literally. Well, almost literally. We don't have autonomous sanctions legislation. We could pass a dedicated law to do that, like we did with the Russia Sanctions Act after the invasion of Ukraine. But that would be a higher step, a little bit more complicated. And I think the government has said that there's no desire to do that at this stage, that they think publicly naming and shaming China goes far enough.
The government this morning issued a statement of condemnation, calling the use of such cyber espionage unacceptable. And the Prime Minister, Christopher Luxon, says officials will deliver that message directly to the Chinese ambassador.
We have seen a bipartisan approach to this in general, the attributing cyber attacks. So in 2021, Andrew Little was the Spy Minister, and he made an announcement about a different attack, but from the same state actor.
The Chinese embassy in New Zealand has labelled claims that Beijing is behind state-sponsored cyber attacks as totally groundless and irresponsible.
So there's been increased openness in recent years and a willingness to be a little bit more frank and say, look, this is state-sanctioned, state-sponsored activity from China. I'm sure the Labour Party will have been either looped in advance or certainly aware of this. I think, in fact, Andrew Little said that he was informed at the time of this attack, but obviously that attribution process takes a little bit longer. So I think there's a desire to have everyone on the same page and not be seen to be going off in different directions on very sensitive national security issues like this.
Well, the timing's interesting too, because last week Luxon was hosting the Chinese foreign minister. So
yes.
Was this so that he didn't have to mention it? Would he have known about it at the time?
I don't think he's explicitly said, but it is almost certain that he would have. And I think the calculus would be, well, maybe it would be taken more seriously if we raised it face-to-face in those meetings. But also, I think, had it been on the table and had it been announced when Wang Yi came into the country, that would have derailed the discussions around other areas, like the trade agreement, like, potential areas of cooperation, international students addressing those issues. So
it wouldn't have been in our interests, basically.
Yes, I think so. It's again, that kind of trying to find a measured response, and I think I can understand why they landed where they did, because that would have upped the stakes quite dramatically, and we probably would have seen even more serious retaliation from China had Wang Yi been seen to be embarrassed in that way.
So, quoting the name of your book, it is the China tightrope.
Yes, it is. It is a very fine line we walk, a tightrope, and I think this is an example of that. It's the ties with Western nations around security, but it is the economic factors with China. So, you had Judith Collins yesterday saying,
China is a very good friend, and we obviously have a long-term relationship with them, but what we are also never going to accept people attacking our democratic institutions.
So there's a slight discordance there, really.
This is one of the headlines says, friends don't let friends hack each other.
Yes. Not quite true, I would say. If you look at the history of, say, the Snowden files, there have been cases where some of our friends, the likes of the United States, have, in fact, spied on their allies. So probably overly simple. But I think, there is a broader point to that, which is that, we talk about how close we are, and yet we're sort of surveilling each other or trying to hack into each other, or the Chinese are trying to hack into New Zealand's system. So it doesn't quite sit right, does it?
No. Sam, what data has been taken? Do we know? Is it like the Waikato DHB hack? Our personal information? Should we be worried about it?
We don't know much. Unsurprisingly, the spy agencies are being very cautious about what they're saying, but you had the GCSB Director General say that...
I'm not going to go into the details of the data specifically, but I will say that from the analysis that's been conducted, that information of a sensitive or strategic nature was not removed from the system.
So that's a good sign if we take them at their word, and I think we have to. There was nothing overly sensitive taken. I think there, you know, potentially was some personal information that may have been removed, but the exact nature of that, we're not sure. I think that the phrasing they used is that it was technical information that would have potentially set the stage for a further attack to happen had it not been, you know, caught by the authorities and some measures put in place. So few question marks, but I think the worst case scenario has been avoided.
I mean, Anne-Marie Brady, who's neck deep in all this, she believes that the very, very vital information was safe, that the systems are robust.
Yes, yeah, and you know, I think that's right. You know, from what Anne-Marie has said, and from what we've heard from the GCSB and the government, I think, you know, if that was not the case, and if sensitive information, particularly sensitive information, had been removed, we may not have been told that, but we certainly wouldn't have had assertions that no, it's fine, nothing strategic was taken.
You know, we're going to get to the stage where we just type everything on pieces of paper and hand them in.
That's it. Maybe that's the safest. We can just have face-to-face conversations, you know, meet in parking lots. No, this is the sort of the nature of the digital age that we live in, is that, you know, you can have a lot of digital communications. Yes, there are risks there. It's not going to be foolproof, the measures that you put in place, but certainly I think you can be. There's a personal awareness, but then there's also sort of institutional systems and security that can be put in place to stop things like this from happening.
Who is actually physically doing the hacking? Is the Communist Party of China outsourcing this job, or is it just benefiting from the work?
I think it is outsourcing it. So the terminology that gets used is state sponsored actors. So it's, you know, there's sort of front groups that are set up, companies or through, you know, other organisations. It's at a bit of arm's length from the Chinese state itself, and that's to have plausible deniability to say, well, look, no, you know, they're not a state employee. This is not something that we are doing as a government. But in fact, there is, you know, financial backing there. There's a degree of direction that comes from the, you know, the state. In this case, it's the Ministry of State Security in China, which would handle, you know, cyber warfare like this. So it's, you know, having a little bit of remove, which allows them to sort of claim that their hands are clean, but in fact they are, you know, quite thoroughly involved in actions like this.
What do they want from us? What are they looking for?
I think it's you know, a mix of things. In New Zealand's case, yes, we are friendly with China, but we are a member of the Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance. We do work closely with the United States, so it's useful, I think, for China to get what information it can in terms of, you know, discussions between governments, you know, the work that is done around legislation which may affect China. I think there's, you know, a sense on the Chinese side that New Zealand and the West in general has become more hostile towards it in recent years. I think we and others would say that's because of China's actions. But it's, you know, defensive to a degree, but obviously offensive. It's trying to gather information about its critics, and that was the case in the UK and the US more explicitly. You know, British politicians were the subject of hack attempts, surveillance attempts. We haven't had that confirmed here in New Zealand's case, but that's the sort of nature of the work that they're doing and the information they're after.
Although the GCSB Director General did say that some politicians here were targeted during the election and that they had to basically, you know, save them from themselves. They had to say, this is what's happening to you.
Yes, yeah. I think that's been a mission that our spies have been on for a while. They've been a bit more upfront about this. They released foreign interference guidelines for politicians. That must have been a few years ago now, trying to explain, you know, this is how you might be approached, this is the sort of, you know, information that they might be after, and this is why you need to be on guard. But, you know, I don't think everyone heeds that message, has read those guidelines, and, you know, when you're on the campaign trail and you're just trying to, you know, get as many votes as you can, I can understand why you might not apply the due diligence that you perhaps should. So, yes, they talked about that. That came up at the Intelligence and Security Committee this week. You had the NZSIS Director General Andrew Hampton talking about the, you know, attempt of foreign states. He didn't name China, but they're almost certainly involved to build influence with candidates, with parties, and in particular with candidates of certain ethnic backgrounds.
Are we, in a sense, a little naive about this? I mean, you know, I guess if someone approaches you and offers to donate to your campaign, you're kind of not asking too many questions because you need the money.
Yes, yeah. I think we're becoming a little bit more alert and aware. There is still a ways to go, I think. It would be fair to say there is a degree of naivety that is starting to change, but we probably need to, look the gift horse in the mouth a little bit more, I think, when it comes to things like this. Certainly in terms of financial contributions, party donations, and that is something we've been talking about much, much more recently after some, you know, high-profile court cases. But influence building more generally, it's not just about money. I think it's a need to be on guard and to, you know, if it seems like something is quite slightly off, try and verify this and figure out, you know, if there are any ulterior motives.
So what does this attack mean for how New Zealand views China, looking ahead and as it thinks about issues like AUKUS and China building infrastructure in the Pacific, getting a growing influence there? Do we take a different tack?
Look, I don't think it does wonders for the relationship, to state the obvious. Things have already been, tightening up. I spoke to Jason Young at the New Zealand China Contemporary Research Centre, who said there's been a narrowing of the relationship, and I think that's a good way to talk about it. You know, it's for all that we talk about taking things to the next level, which was the sort of language used after Wang Yi's visit recently. You've got issues like Hong Kong and the national security laws there, Taiwan, Xinjiang with the Uyghur Muslims. The more time you spend talking about those sort of challenging aspects, I think the less time it leaves you to address the more positive aspects of the relationship, like our trade links and people-to-people connections. So those things aren't going to go away. We're going to continue to have a strong trade relationship with China, and I don't think anyone says that we shouldn't, really, but it just becomes harder, I guess, because you see these areas where we disagree with China more than where we agree, and that just takes up more and more space.
We can't ignore those issues, though.
No, we can't, absolutely. And this is the sort of the problem that we're grappling with, and we have to deal with it. And I think, you know, there are some who are, you know, probably too focused on the golden days of the relationship, where it was all about, you know, the good things and trade. And they don't, I think, in my view, recognise that, you know, China's actions have changed as well, in the way that China is trying to assert itself in the world and more than assert itself, interfere, I think, in the affairs of other countries. And there's an irony in that, because China always, you know, sees when there's criticism of its actions that countries should not interfere in the internal affairs of another country. But then we see, you know, actions like this, a cyber attack on New Zealand systems, and yes, they've denied it, but I don't think we can give that denial too much weight.
That's a cultural thing, isn't it? That they will always deny that they've done something, even if it's bang smack obvious and right in your face.
Yeah, and there is, you know, there's an element of plausible deniability there, and that's why, you know, I think we've talked about this, why you would use a state-sponsored group rather than doing it directly. You can kind of make a claim that we, you know, our hands are nowhere near this, even if that's not the case. But yes, they've always been very fervent in their denials of any wrongdoing when it's raised, with them.
The embassy urges New Zealand to stop its mudslinging, to abandon its Cold War mentality.
Fiery response from the Chinese embassy. They say they outright reject what they say are the groundless and irresponsible allegations by the New Zealand government.
In a statement, the Chinese embassy says China expresses strong dissatisfaction about and firm opposition to the claim.
The Chinese embassy in New Zealand has denied the claims, calling them a malicious smear.
A normal response, apparently, but the pattern of their responses indicates they don't really care. Does China care about the New Zealand relationship?
I think they do. I'm not sure that they are particularly concerned about how, you know, incidents like this will affect it. I think they know that, you know, New Zealand gets a lot of value. I hate to put everything in economic terms, but this is what it comes back to a lot of the time. New Zealand gets a lot of value out of the Chinese market in terms of our business as exporters, so we will probably let things slide in ways that we wouldn't were it the case for other countries. Yeah, I think that probably helps to give China some backing, I guess, in terms of you know, issuing denials like this, but also, you know, carrying on and doing, you know, further cyber attacks, because it knows that the bar would be quite high for New Zealand to take any significant, you know, economic or retaliatory action.
Yeah. And is this a reason to urgently address the issue of having too many eggs in the China basket when it comes to trade?
It certainly helps to make the case for that, doesn't it? And you know, that is something that the last government was working on, and this government has indicated it would continue to do. You know, we've got the trade deal with the EU that's just is coming into effect from the 1st of May, the UK deal that's been in place since last year. So those sort of things start to build up that diversification and being able to spread your business around a little bit more. That will take time because businesses have put a lot of effort into the Chinese market and they've been encouraged to do so. So it's not about pulling all your resources, all your staff out of China and putting it elsewhere, but it's saying, yes, let's keep working with China, but actually let's put a little bit more effort, more time into these new markets that, you know, have improved, well, existing markets, but with new and improved access for us, and help to spread the load a little bit more. So if something goes really bad, that we're not going to be, you know, severely affected.
Will we ever be able to trust China?
In other aspects of the relationship, sure. I think trust is being eroded. But, you know, we don't necessarily trust the United States on everything either. You know, if we think about things like the steel tariff action that was taken under Donald Trump and the possibility of, you know, a second Trump presidential term and what that would mean for New Zealand, there are ways to navigate around it, but it certainly makes it harder. So I think, you know, that trust is not necessarily as strong as it has been in the past in the New Zealand-China relationship, and that is going to affect the way that we can work with them. So, you know, things like, you know, trade, that'll carry on, but in terms of, you know, new areas of cooperation, we used to train together and do defence training. I don't think that's happening anymore. You know, other areas of potential expansion, I think, are off limits just because we can't fully be sure that, you know, we can take China at its word.
Hmm. And was this a particularly egregious attack, given that it goes to the heart of our democracy, right into parliament buildings?
It is particularly striking, isn't it? So, you know, Chinese cyber attacks are not new in New Zealand. There have been reports in the past, as we've talked about, but those have been largely focused on commercial actors. And that doesn't legitimise them or excuse them, but it's, you know, when it's just for money, it kind of feels a little less personal, right? But when you've got it, you know, targeting theoretically our MPs, our ministers, our democratic institutions, it does feel worse. So I think it is, it certainly takes it up a couple of notches in terms of how we feel about it as a country and how our politicians have responded. I don't think, you know, even if it was, we were more measured than we could have been, I think it would have been, you know, even further down the chain were it not something that was targeted at our political institutions, because we do value those as very important and critical to who we are as New Zealanders.
That's all for today. The Detail is supported by RNZ and New Zealand On Air. This episode was engineered by Jeremy Ansell and produced by Gwen McClure and Davina Zimmer. Thanks to Sam Suchdeva. I'm Alexia Russell. Mark Te Wa.